Malicide by Claire Redaway. People say it's good to have a hobby. I'm not so sure. Take Gerard, for instance. Now, Gerard is a Templar geek. There are a lot of them out there, you'd be surprised. Gerard has arrived at the spot where you are now standing on a particular day that he's chosen with particular care. He's brought his list. It's a list of all the Templar sites in Britain, and he's visiting them, one by one. He's got quite a long way through. He acknowledges that working flexi time is a bit of an advantage. What does Gerard feel as he arrives at the entrance? Reverence and awe. He runs his hands over the wrought iron gates with their fleur-de-lis and the lettering on the top, spelling out the name, Temple or Holy Church. For him, these visits are a kind of pilgrimage. He smiles wryly. He's on a pilgrimage, and pilgrims were the raison d'etre of his heroes. It's another connection. He pushes the gate open and walks towards the church.
I am walking where Templars once walked, he thinks, breathing air they once breathed.
He takes a deep breath and chokes on petrol fumes. As he wonders idly what happens to air and thinks some of it must have been here since the 12th century, it's only recycled after all, so perhaps he's right and this air has been through Templar lungs, he gets to the corner of the church. Gerard puts out a hand and strokes the wall, running a finger into the mason's mark. He tuts.
Sacrilege, he thinks.
This mason with his crude arrow-shaped gash is a symbol of the erasing of history. You see, the church that now stands on this site is not the one that Gerard is so taken with. Gerard's circular Templar church is underneath this structure. It was flattened, leaving only the foundations, and this, Gerard scowls, this abomination was built on top of it. Gerard feels the smooth curves of the carving on the walls. Others might appreciate the delicate Gothic tracery of a medieval place of worship. Gerard sees only the gaping roof, the victim of a Nazi bomb in 1940. Gerard smiles. He knows that this was no accident. He knows that the bomb was not meant for the docks, as everyone says, but was vengeance for ancient defilement. Hitler was a fan of the Templars. Apparently, he liked the idea of a band of warrior monks, a highly disciplined military machine that required absolute loyalty and whose members were willing to martyr themselves for their cause. Not that Gerard holds with Hitler, mind. Indeed, he thinks the Templars might be put out by the association. But Gerard has to agree with Adolf that the church had to go. Gerard shivers and glances up. The tower casts this entrance into deep, cold shade. Bristol's Tower of Pisa. Gerard wonders if it's the famous tilt that blocks out the sun so effectively. He wants to take his time to savour his visit, but perhaps he'll savour it better if his teeth aren't chattering. Turning left, he follows the walls, letting his fingers trail along the stones. He enjoys the contrast between the roughly hewn blocks and the highly buffed, carved window lintels. Perhaps the Hospitallers, Gerard sneers at the name, used the stones from the original when they built their oh-so-ordinary cruciform church in the 14th century. Before it was theirs, this was the centre of Templar operations in the southwest, a hive of activity. It must have been magnificent, and it must have required a whole load of stones. Gerard reaches a large wooden door. He tries the handle. He wants to get in. Inside, he knows he could walk the shape of the original church. He knows he would be able to make a connection with the past to feel the force. His internet buddies always feel a force when they visit Templar sites, and it never happens to him. The door's locked, and even though he twists the knob and pushes hard against the wood, it doesn't shift. Searching for another entrance, he continues alongside the walls. Gerard's obsession with the Templars began with a topic at school on the Crusades. He'd started reading about the order of monks founded to protect pilgrims on their journey to the Holy Land, and he'd never stopped. Now he tries to live his life according to Templar rules. He's celibate, although let's face it, that's not entirely his choice. He's tried to do his bit to protect pilgrims, but there's not much call for it in Basingstoke, so he's sticking to outward manifestations for now. He's wearing a Templar tabard under his anorak, white, with a large red cross. He tried to grow a beard, as Templars were not allowed to shave, but it was too itchy and more tufty than flowing, so he shaved it off. He's changed his name. Well, there weren't any Grand Masters of the Knights Templar called Gerald, so he swapped the L for an R, and now he models himself on Gerard of Riedfort, Grand Master from 1185 to 1189. Riedfort was okay. He was a brave warrior and died in battle, but Gerard, the 21st century one, does sometimes wish his mother had named him James. Then he could have been James of Molay, burnt at the stake in the sight of Notre Dame, cursing the French king and the Pope as he sizzled. But to be fair on his mother, she wasn't to know he'd become a Templar fanatic. Gerard reaches the corner of the church. He turns right and walks towards another small wrought-iron gate which opens into the churchyard. Once through, he climbs three steps and pauses. He looks up through the ruined tracery of the arched windows to see the tower silhouetted against the sky. And then Gerard realises.
They've got that wrong too, he thinks.
It tilts because the Templars are protesting at their treatment. It's obvious. Vile lies were told about them, that they were sodomites and heretics, that initiates had to deny Christ, worship a strange idol called Baphomet, and place kisses on obscene parts of the body. Gerard rather wishes someone would place kisses on obscene parts of his body. Stop it! Gerard hesitates. He could clamber over a ruined bit of wall and climb down into the gully that loops around the east side of the church, or he could follow the tarmac path, admiring the church whilst keeping his feet dry and his ankles untwisted. Sensibly, he opts for the path, walking up to the flowerbed and turning right. It had looked dark and dank in the gully.
Very medieval, he thinks.
He's not sure why he reckons medieval England was particularly dark and dank, but he's positive it was. Gerard spends a lot of time thinking about medieval England. He spends a lot of time chatting on the internet about it too, when he's not building models. His mother was furious with him when he took over the whole living room with a scale model of the Temple of the Rock. In fact, she started getting grumpy when he gave up shoelaces.
What on earth's the matter with shoelaces? She'd said.
It's well known that these abominable things belong to pagans, Gerard had answered.
Thank God they didn't know about Velcro, she'd said. The world is not ready to see you in socks and flip-flops. And have you checked out 12th century monastic policy on excessive use of chat rooms? He'd had to move out when Mum took up with Derek Chambers. Well, they'd bought a flat with no spare room, so unless he slept on a blow-up lilo on the kitchen floor, there wasn't the space. Still, it meant he could get a place of his own and no one would complain about his models and his computers. He did miss her, though. Funny, she's the only person who'd noticed his shoelace boycott. Gerard's hand brushes against the plants on his right. The smell of crushed herb penetrates the petrol fumes. He rubs the leaves between his fingers, this one rosemary, the next sage, then curry plant.
Herb treatment, thinks Gerard.
Gerard spends more time than he'd admit online playing Aeon in the guise of a warrior Templar, and he finds the ploy herb treatment is rather successful at holding off the enemy. Is there a park keeper who plays Aeon? Gerard knows that the park keeper would say the plants were medieval strewing herbs, but that really the significance of the herbs lies in their potency in battle, or even, Gerard glances over his shoulder in case his thoughts can be heard, even for use in occult Templar rituals that are still so hidden. Gerard is getting very excited. He feels he's really reading the secrets of this site. The roofless church, the twisted tilting tower, the herbs. All he needs to do is get inside. And then he spots it. He takes the second path on the right and runs down the six steps that lead to the final door. He caresses the arch with both hands. Maybe this is the one, he thinks. Let this be the one. There's a niche on the right that must have once held holy water. He runs his fingers inside it, searching for any residual dampness. It's bone dry, but even so, despite having not a drop of Catholic blood, he makes the sign of the cross.
Might as well, he thinks, for luck.
He closes his eyes, hoping. He twists the handle and pushes, but even when he puts his full weight against it, the door doesn't move. Gerard is so frustrated that he bangs both his fists hard against the wood and the door opens. A man stands in the doorway. He's about Gerard's height, lean, fit, with pale skin pulled tightly over high cheekbones and a faintly military bearing. Gerard thinks there's something familiar about him, something about the turn of his head. His long, thin fingers are interlocked as if in prayer.
Good morning, Gerard, he says.
Gerard's mouth drops open.
Who?
He manages. Then, how
do you know my name?
We've been waiting for you, says the stranger.
Who's we?
Asks Gerard. The stranger laughs, but it's not really a laugh for sharing.
I think you know, he answers.
Gerard trembles. Is it? Could it be? At last?
Are you a Templar?
Asks Gerard.
I am a messenger.
Pleasure floods Gerard's body. He, Gerard, has been chosen out of all those that could have been picked. He's always known the Templars had carried on underground, secretly, and here now is proof. He's meeting one who's been waiting for him. The stranger steps forward and the door clangs shut behind him. He walks past Gerard and up the steps. He pauses and looks back, and Gerard realises he's supposed to follow.
So you know all about them then, the Templars,
says Gerard as he scurries after the stranger. They turn right and follow the path towards an avenue of trees.
Everything that passes between us must remain secret, says the stranger.
Oh, of course. But are there many of you? Are you all in positions of great power? Do you still have the Grail?
Says Gerard.
I remember a time when these trees were saplings,
says the stranger, who is obviously not one for answering questions. Gerard is puzzled. Surreptitiously, he puts his arms around the trunk of the nearest tree. He can nearly touch his fingertips. So old, possibly very old, indeed older than the man looks, but not medieval. Gerard shakes his head to dislodge doubt. After the fifth tree, the stranger veers sharply to the right, across a lawn, to the tomb, where he sits down.
I mean, I totally believe the Templars discovered America. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it?
Says Gerard, trotting after the stranger and sitting down next to him.
But people say that 9/11 was about restoring the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem and raising its twin towers. I wasn't sure about that one.
The stranger's eyes are cold.
The Templars are behind everything, he says.
Gerard shivers. Somehow, it had seemed more amusing when he'd read this theory on the internet. More like another link in a really complicated crossword puzzle.
Now, you got lost on the way here, the stranger says.
Oh, yes, says Gerard. I found myself outside the tax office.
You think that's a coincidence? Says the stranger.
I missed the turning.
Gerard starts, and then he realises, of course, the Templars were the first bankers, the taxmen of their day.
There are no coincidences, says the stranger.
Oh, how did you know? Gerard asks.
The stranger only smiles.
What is the date today? He asks.
It's Friday the 13th of October, Gerard answers.
Why did you choose today to come here?
Oh, well, it's the date of the arrest. On Friday the 13th of October, 1307, 2,000 Templars were imprisoned in Paris. It was the end of the order, says Gerard.
Correct, says the stranger. Now, we believe you are ready.
I am, breathes Gerard.
We are waiting for the call to the final battle. We are poised to create a new world order, says the stranger.
I know,
says Gerard, which is a lie.
We need to know who is with us. You must renounce your will to the rule.
I have, says Gerard. I can. I will.
The stranger leans in towards Gerard. We need proof. Gerard tingles. Would he have to undergo an initiation rite?
Would it involve obscene kisses? Stop it.
The stranger looks like he can read Gerard's thoughts. Gerard is embarrassed.
What do you want me to do?
He asks. Malicide, says the stranger.
The killing of evil,
thinks Gerard. A murder which is not a sin.
Who?
Whispers Gerard, and he waits. The stranger stares into the sky, and Gerard runs through the possibilities. The Pope, Osama bin Laden, Simon Cowell, all tricky to assassinate in their own different ways.
Derek Chambers, says the stranger.
Well, my mum's Derek, says Gerard.
He's gobsmacked. Derek Chambers, window cleaner, a threat to the New World Order. Who'd have thought it?
Derek Chambers, the stranger repeats.
But why?
Proof of your commitment. It's your initiation ceremony.
The stranger's eyes are burning into Gerard's.
I could do it, thinks Gerard. Then I'd be a Templar knight, revered, admired, perhaps even a guardian of the Grail.
Gerard had always wanted to be an insider, one of the gang.
Can't be that hard, a murder,
he thinks.
No, not murder, malicide. What can I use? A gun? Where would I get a gun from? Well, a kitchen knife, then.
Pushing the knife into Derek, into his stomach. How do you hold a knife to push it into someone? He'd have to experiment with some beef or something. Or maybe he could hit him over the head, although that might not kill him. And then he'd have to explain. Gerard wonders whether the Surrey police would accept malicide as mitigation. He doubts it somehow. He hesitates. A chill wind seems to sweep over the lawn to the tomb. The stranger leans over and places his hand on Gerard's arm. Gerard feels hot and shivery all over. The stranger stares into Gerard's eyes. Gerard thinks that malicide might be beyond him. He thinks even his pilgrimage is beyond him. Gerard really wishes he hadn't chosen the 13th of October to visit this place. He wishes he hadn't visited at all. And then he looks down. The stranger is wearing black brogues with laces. He's a fraud, a devil wearing the disguise of a Templar, and he's nearly made Gerard. Gerard leaps to his feet.
Get thee from me, Baphomet,
he shouts. The stranger smiles.
Gerard, he says winningly.
It's Gerald,
says Gerard. The stranger shrugs.
As you wish.
He stands up, and as if without a care, he turns and walks away into the gathering dusk. Gerard has a moment of intense regret. He has loved the Templars his whole life, and now he's failed his first test, his first opportunity, perhaps his only opportunity to really belong. But as he is about to call the stranger back, Gerard remembers how difficult it is to push a knife into raw beef, and he doesn't make the call. Rubbing his arm, he hurries across the lawn to the gates at the edge of the park. Later, when discussing the day with his internet buddies, they will suggest the stranger is no Templar, but Gerald's alter ego, his id,
Gerald wants to kill his stepfather and marry his mother, or kill his mother and marry his stepfather, or something. Gerald will go along with this and even offer his own thoughts on the matter. But now, as he pauses by the gates and looks back over the ruined church for the last time, he rolls up his sleeve and looks at his arm. On it, burnt deep into the flesh, raw red and blistering, is the shape of the pale hand that was laid on him by a stranger in a park. The brand of the Templar.